Before we start this episode of Group Answers, I am super excited to let you know about a small groups webinar that I will be hosting on October 9th, 2018 at 11 a.m. Central Time. Our panelists, Steve Gladen from Saddleback Church, Heather Zimple from National Community Church, and Bill Willits from North Point Community Church, will be talking about how to have effective small groups in the modern church. We're at a time when a lot of churches are giving up on or they're moving away from even offering small groups. So how are these three trend-setting churches continuing to produce life-changing and disciple-making groups for not only just church members, but for people outside of the church as well? And the best part about the webinar, it's completely free. Just go to groupswebinar.com. That's groupswebinar.com. Register. And I'll see you October 9th at 11 a.m. for 1 hour. Now, Group Answers.
Podcast show. This is episode 69. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt. As summer winds down here, Chris, it doesn't feel like it outside, but it's over. It is over.
It's done. We went to our last baseball game this past weekend for the minor leagues. It's over. But I think you kind of went out with a bang. You've been like traveling the world, climbing mountains. Did I see you do a 14?
I feel it, Chris. I'm feeling it.
Did you do a 14?
I did. It's my 20th one.
Oh my goodness.
I've actually summited 21, but I've done a couple of them twice. That makes it 20. Yeah, I was on 19. So I wanted the 20th different peak, and we did it.
That's incredible. What peak did you do?
Mount Princeton, 14,197 feet. Chris Surratt, but who's counting?
Oh man. Can you breathe at that point, or do you have to
It gets rough because this was the worst shape I've been in going out there. So I counted on savvy and experience this time. And slowness.
So forget the training. Forget the cardio.
Well, if you've done a few of them, you can kind of forget the training. I mean, yeah, but it was really hard. We went up there with my daughter and one of her friends and a friend of mine that I've done a lot of backpacking with. So it took us, it was a 5.5 hour round trip. Still wasn't bad.
Wow, the pictures looked amazing.
It was awesome, Chris. Colorado is calling, it continues to call my name.
That's my home. So I was born there.
I did not know that.
Yeah, we moved when I was two, but I was born in Colorado, in Denver, Colorado.
Were your brothers born there too?
My brothers,
just you?
No, my brothers and my sister were all.
That's cool.
Well, you know, I don't know about born, but they basically grew up in Colorado. I was born in Colorado.
So, but this was the cool thing. We actually, because my wife was with us this time, she's not into the 14er so much, but she did. We fly fished one day, and I'd never done that before.
Wow. That seems hard.
If you know, you just pay the guide, and it's not so hard.
Yeah, I mean, I would just be afraid of hooking everybody around me as I threw out the line. I don't fish anyway. It just seems like a smelly kind of thing to
open
do.
Open spaces. But we actually were all excited about eating our fish that night. And so I cleaned them and we grilled them. And, you know, they weren't so great. It wasn't so great.
But it's about the experience.
It was.
This kind of dovetails into what we actually do here. It's about the experience, right?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Community. Yeah.
So we are excited to once again, Ken, is this the fourth time, third time? You're a recurring guest here.
Yeah, they're just because y'all can't get anybody else on, I guess. I get the invitation to come back.
You sit over there.
This is
he
my
didn't get
third.
Bumped this time.
Yeah, this is my third time.
Man, do we give him like a watch or
no,
a parting gift?
No, there's no gifts.
Oh, okay.
No, we don't have anything to give.
That's true.
I mean, I've probably got some stuff around the desk out there.
Time with you two is all the gift I need.
You think being syndicated, we'd have some money behind this thing, but we don't.
That's right. That's right. And we're international, too.
That's true.
Chris, why don't you tell the good listeners about Brother Ken?
Well, Ken is currently the manager for Lifeway's ongoing adult Bible studies. Another way to say that is Sunday school.
Hear, hear.
Yes, if you use studies in your Sunday school, there is a good chance that Ken had something to do with it, oversaw it. And so that's what he does for his day job. But he's also an 18-year church education staff leader and blogs regularly about Sunday school and groups ministry at kenbrady.com. That's KenBrady.com. And Ken, you're pretty prolific when it comes to your blog.
I
blog a lot. Yeah, I used to. When I first launched it about 6-7 years ago, I didn't really know what I was doing. So I was blogging twice a week and thought that was regular enough and got encouraged by some other bloggers that were, you know, further along down the road to, hey, if you're going to do it, just get serious and just jump in with both feet. And they said, so blog every day. So that's what I started doing several years ago. So I blog Monday through Friday and have a little cadence to the blog posts on Mondays. I will expose my blog readers to a paragraph or two from a book on Christian education or leadership, group ministry. So I'll quote a paragraph or two and then make some application to Bible study ministry. Tuesdays are easy. It's teaching tip day. So Tuesday teaching tips. And I'll throw out a teaching tip or two for those that are leading groups on Wednesdays and Thursdays, two new blog posts. And on Fridays, what I like to do is something called Friday Faves, and I'll find about six or so blog post. Chris, I'll link to your blog, to this group's blog here at Lifeway, Dr. Tom Rayner, others that are out there talking about church leadership or Sunday school or groups, and I'll find some of the best content from the week and post that so that my readers can have something to read over the weekend, and then we just repeat the cycle the next week.
That's awesome. You're also kind enough to blog regularly at the group ministry blog at Lifeway. So if you go to lifeway.com/groups or groups ministry, you can read a lot of what Ken has written and really, really good stuff. I would encourage you to put it in your feeder or your aggregate, however you read your blogs.
And what ways are you engaged with Sunday school like right now?
Like right
Because you've been
now.
A teacher for a long time.
True, yeah. When my wife and I, Tammy and I, moved here to the Nashville area back in 2010 and got involved with a congregation here locally, we stepped out of a class and started a new one. And so it was a foray into new group ministry and birthing a new group. And we had a great time with that. I did that for just a little over 6 years. And this last January, I was invited to become part of a local church's staff, and I'm doing it very part-time, really 10, 12, 15 hours a week would be the upper end on most weeks. But I'm providing leadership to that church and its Sunday school and discipleship ministry. So basically what I did in the local church for about 18 years before coming to Lifeway, I'm doing again now. In a part-time capacity. So just trying to help them grow their Sunday school, strengthen discipleship, and things like that.
So, Chris, it's out of those experiences that things like the Tuesday tips and all the blog posts and the books and anything that Ken writes or composes emerges.
Yeah, and that's what I love about a lot of the people at Lifeway is that everybody I've met is very involved in their local church. And so when you read things, read books by people at Lifeway. It's their experiences with their small group, with their church, and it's in the trenches, not just sitting somewhere and talking about it, but really doing the ministry, and that's what's awesome about what Ken's doing right now.
Yeah, it's not an experience from 2008 or 1988. It's last week is what it comes out of, the week before that.
Although 88 was a good year.
88.
88 Reasons Christ is Coming Back. Did you read that book?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, in 1980.
Of course I did.
I still have it somewhere. It didn't happen, I guess, unless we missed it.
So Ken has also written several books. We've got those listed in front of us. But Ken, in addition to all of those things, we wanted to we have in our hands a proposal for a book that you are currently writing or have written. I think you've written it, right, for
it
the most
is.
Part?
Yeah, it's done. It's written. It is the manuscript has been turned in, and it is ready for publishing.
So what we wanted to do was just take a few minutes and talk through these 12 principles for breathing life into your Sunday school that you have created. But before that, I noticed in one of the parts of the, which, by the way, guys, a proposal is no small matter. Chris, I think you've probably written a few of these.
Yes.
This one particularly is like 15 pages long. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into these.
I've never gone that in depth with one. Ken really did it.
Yeah, he did. So there's a reference here to declining attendance and declining financial giving among members and guests that a lot of church leaders are facing today. So, I mean, it seems like to me that you would suggest that a strong Sunday school ministry is one way that we can, or a church leader, may stymie some of the trends that we're seeing in the church world, church leadership role.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this would also extend the conversation into churches who have a hybrid approach, and they have experimented with Sunday school and off-campus groups. There's a lot of that going on. Or churches that, by the design of their campus, can't have groups, adult groups in particular, on campus, and have chosen a small group off-campus model. I think that these principles work in any environment, but I do maintain that a healthy group ministry will certainly help a church stop some of the people drain that we tend to be seeing these days. So yes, I'm a big fan of putting people in smaller groups and helping them build relationships. Even Dr. Rayner's research has shown that when people get connected to groups, you know, that they tend to stick around longer and become healthier church members. So definitely a big fan of moving people out of rows from the service and then into those smaller circles of people in Bible study together.
So Chris, you've written a few books too. You guys tell me, how long do these ideas percolate before you start writing?
For me, a long time. I mean, my first book were principles that I'd worked on for probably 5 years at that point. I had also started a blog kind of writing about that material. So I had written pretty extensively on the topic for probably 3 or 4 years before I even considered writing a book. And I think, I don't know if this is your experience, but I think that's key is working out some of the ideas and the principles in some form, whether it's a blog or it's a journal or just somewhere that you're working it through before you put it into kind of a book. Is that how you feel, Ken?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's incredibly important. That it percolates long enough that you have a chance to experience it, to have it affirmed several times before you start writing about it, and you know, call it a principle or a trend, those kinds of things. And you know, with our speaking that we get to do and the training that goes on, you know, from here at Lifeway, sometimes just traveling around the country and being in different parts of the country, but hearing some of the same stories and some of the same needs just affirms, you know, some of those things that you're seeing and you're thinking about writing about, or you think it's a trend or you think it's a principle. That helps me as I hear it. If I hear it in California or I hear it in Alabama or I hear it in Tennessee or Texas or just, you know, wherever you want to, you know, go, it helps me, I think, to have confidence that, you know, you may be onto something and you actually do have something that is a principle and is transferable from place to place.
So you've tentatively titled this Breathing Life into Sunday School.
Yes.
Is that from your experience traveling around that you're seeing Sunday schools that need life breathed into them?
Yes, absolutely. In most places, and there are always exceptions, you know, to the rule, but it feels like in most churches where I visit, either as an invited guest, I'm there for the day to do training or speak, or those times when I'm traveling and I just go visit a church kind of incognito, and I'm just a John Doe, you know, guest, and I just slip into a group and just experience Bible study. Feels like on most days, the churches where I visit, they need a little life infused. It feels like Sunday school could be healthier than it is in a lot of places. And so that was part of the inspiration for the book, is just wanting to help churches do some things that will help them improve the quality of their Sunday school, hopefully be attractive to guests when the guests do decide to come to a group. And hopefully it'll help them stick and stay in a group. I think that's good for churches when that happens. So, yes, this is kind of how the content for the book came into play. And it's just, honestly, guys, it's things that I have done over the years to help several churches grow and to become much healthier Bible study churches, Sunday school churches, has been my background. So a lot of this comes just out of things that I've seen work. I know that these principles will work, and I'm excited to help others discover these things. And it may be that they are learning or being reminded about things that they know they ought to be doing. But now that they see these things listed, they go, oh, yeah, there's a list now of some things, 12 things that we can start chipping away at. And they can pick the order. Some churches will, pick different orders. And that's fine. It's just whatever they perceive their biggest needs are. Hey, look, here's a list of 12 things, and we'll start chipping away at it, just whatever order seems to make sense to them.
I had a follow-up question there. Chris, just bear with me. I know you got all kinds of things you want to talk about.
It's
over
okay.
There.
We can edit this out.
So I want to ask you, why now? I mean, what was there a tipping point? Had you been sitting on like 11 principles for years and all of a sudden that 12th one came? What was the environment? What was the context for saying, all right, I'm ready to write this book. It's time.
Yeah, that's a great question. I had as a goal for 2018, I have started using Michael Hyatt's Full Focus Planner, and part of his system for managing your day and your year and your week and your month is to identify some annual goals. Well, back in late 17, I picked up his planner, decided I'll start using that in 18. And one of the first things you do in his planning system is you identify several annual goals, 4, 5, or 6 big annual goals. And one of the goals that I jotted down is I want to write a book to help pastors, Sunday school directors, ministers of education, whoever's in charge of a church's Bible study ministry, whatever title they've got. I wanted to help them and put a tool in their hands that it would be quickly accessible. They'd have some principles to follow, things that they could do that really didn't cost a lot of money at all, but would make sense in their local context. And so I thought, I've got a lot of things going on. I'm working on a doctorate right now. I've got a couple classes to go. It's not really great timing with that going on. But I thought, if I don't do it now, it may be a few more years before I get to this. And I thought, I'm just going to put that down as my number one goal for 2018. And I started writing, Brian, and gave myself some personal deadlines. By the end of this month, I want X number of pages, those kind of things. And from all of the conferencing experience that I've had over the years, when I've gone to lead and to talk with group leaders, talk with pastors, talk with education leaders, and think some of these things have come up about, building a healthier environment for Bible study, I thought, let me start jotting these things down. And I really went back to some of my experience in the two churches that I led when I was in Texas and just pulled from those and thought, I could probably, I could have stopped with 6 or 8, could have gone to 15. 12 felt like a good number, and based on the number of words that I was thinking I was going to write, it just broke down, with the different chapters that this was going to hit right about where I wanted to be. So there may be more, that we could throw out there, but I think these 12 are the ones that I have personally seen make a difference. And at the church that I'm serving right now, when I first got there about a year and a half ago, they were running just under 200 or so folks in Bible study. And so today, after we've begun implementing these principles and the pastor and I working very closely together on these, we have had a high day in this church of 296. So we have seen 100 new people come to Bible study in the last year that had formerly not been involved in the Bible study ministry. And so we're thankful for that, thankful to the Lord for that. But literally all we're doing is blocking and tackling. It's what Vince Lombardi used to say football was. He goes, it's just blocking and tackling. These 12 principles are really just a Sunday school or a Bible study ministry's way of blocking and tackling. But when you get away from fundamentals, you lose games. And I think that's what's happened in Sunday school a lot. We've just gotten away from some of the basics that we ought to be doing. And so Sunday schools are not winning like they used to. Mm-hmm. And so this book is really a reminder about some of the basics that we ought to be doing.
Great. Well, let's jump into some of these principles. We won't hit all 12, and that's why you got to buy the book.
Yeah.
But Let's hit them and kind of get your thoughts on why they're important. The first one that you have is teach with variety. Where does that come from?
Teaching with variety comes from one of the pain points that I have experienced as I have visited groups. And that is that for whatever reason, many Sunday school teachers believe that the way to teach is to either sit at a small desk with their materials in front of them, or to stand at a little podium, a teaching stand, music stand, whatever they've got. And basically, while everybody else is seated, they talk about the Bible, they talk about the lesson, they make their points, very much like the pastor might from the pulpit. That's really the church's number one teacher. That's what they've seen modeled. It just doesn't work that great in Sunday school, though, if you want interaction and engagement. And so what I didn't want to see happen are people saying no to Bible study because they are just bored out of their minds when they go to a Bible study group. Most teachers are not going to be able to captivate people's attention with an interesting lecture. It's just not going to happen. And we've all sat in groups like that to where you're checking the watch. Mentally, you're making the grocery list. You know, when is this class over? And I think that's hurt Sunday school. So I'm a huge fan of Bible engagement. I'm a huge fan of active learning. And I believe that that is the way that you help people feel better about inviting friends and family and neighbors to their Bible study group, is when the teacher really understands the different learning approaches, uses those in their teaching, and goes beyond the lecture. And in that chapter, I talk about some ways that God communicated in the Old Testament, and then shifted gears and looked at some of the ways that Christ taught when he ministered during the days of the New Testament. And some of those cross over and are similar, and others are very unique to each of the Testaments. And so the point being is that when God, when Christ had a message to communicate, many times it was done in a way very much not like lecture. And so we identified, 20, 22 different ways that Christ taught in his earthly ministry. I identified seven different ways God communicated in the Old Testament. The whole point being, teach with variety. That's how God seems to do it when he's got a message to communicate. So the encouragement to a group leader is be slightly unpredictable, engage your learners actively, get them into the Bible study, not just listening only, but to keep them a little off balance so that they wonder, you know, what's going to happen next week when we come to Bible study. And it raises their curiosity, and it gives them, I think, confidence to feel like they can invite somebody to their group because they're proud of what's taking place in their group and they're not bored.
What do you tell someone, Ken, that would say to you about this? Well, it seems to be working. I've got this huge Sunday school class and they keep showing up every week. And I do, you know, it's the master teacher philosophy. How do you respond to that position or that response to this?
I would say that numbers don't always mean effectiveness. That sometimes a person, say a master teacher, you know, that gets the big crowd. I mean, is that really the ultimate goal in a group setting? And I think not. I think that the ultimate goal is to disperse disciples and to teach disciples. And it looks like from the way I read the New Testament, the way Jesus did it is he did it with smaller and smaller groups. He had a group of 12. He had a group of 3. On occasion, he taught, you know, large, massive crowds. But on most days, it was done very relationally. And I think that that's another trend, an unfortunate trend in our churches, is that groups are getting bigger. And I'm not a fan of that medium-sized to large group. I've talked to guys in the last month that have classes in their churches of 100, 150 would be normal. And so it does not give people an opportunity to build relationships. It does not give people an opportunity to engage with the scriptures the way they can in a smaller group. And honestly, those guys are hard to replace. You know, when they step down or the job transfers them to another community and you look for another teacher, there are very few people comfortable in standing in front of a large, large group to teach. And so I think we have to change the way we think about teaching. And as David Francis and I said in one of our other books we did together, you know, teaching isn't telling, and learning is not necessarily just listening. And borrowed that concept from Dr. Howard Hendricks. He said that years ago. And so, again, I think active learning is better. It's going to happen more readily in a smaller group.
I love the title for that principle. You say downsize for discipleship.
Yes.
I think that's great. I mean, we think that we want to grow the numbers, and overall, yes. But if we're going to disciple people, it's better done in smaller groups.
I think that's exactly right. And I think that that's maybe where we're missing making disciples in Sunday school. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to come and hear somebody talk about the Bible. It's another thing for me to share life, share my thoughts, to fully engage with the people in the group. Teaching to the crowd is really the easiest way to go about doing it, but not the most effective way. I mean, if it was the right way to go about doing it, this is what Jesus would have done in the New Testament. He'd have gone from town to town. He'd have told the disciples, go get the crowd, you know, tell them there's a fish fry on Friday night. We got a band, you know, let's get the big crowd. That was not the way they did it. I mean, it was done relationally. It was done in small groups. It was done with smaller and smaller groups. And the feeding of the 5,000, the Sermon on the Mount, those were the exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. Most days, Jesus made disciples in smaller groups. And that's why that one chapter is titled Downsize for Discipleship, because I don't want teachers thinking that the person, you know, with the biggest group wins. Mm-hmm. That's really not how you go about making disciples.
Another one I want to hit is a pet peeve of mine and something I stand on quite a bit. In number two, you talk about feed it financially.
Yeah.
Because I think discipleship, whether it's small groups, Sunday school, tends to lose when it comes to the budget financially. So yeah. Talk about that just for a minute.
Yeah, it did, especially, you know, back in 2010, 2009, 2011. When we were in the middle of that, you know, what people have called the Great Recession, we saw staffs downsized. We saw budgets cut and trimmed in ways that we'd not seen before. And sometimes Sunday school and groups ministries, they lost. We lost curriculum. You know, we quit ordering books for people to have to study during the week. We lost new equipment. We just lost. And so that whole chapter on Feed It Financially is just a cry for us to reconsider how we are feeding. And I've borrowed a phrase from a friend of mine, because he had said this, and it just was one of those phrases, you know, that stuck in my head. And he'd said this: if you starve anything long enough, it'll die. Mm. And I thought, I wonder if that applies to Sunday school. You starve it long enough and you'll end up killing it. Well, a lot of times that's really kind of what's happened. We don't have money for training, so we don't train leaders. We don't have money for updating of facilities, so the carpet looks ragged, or we've got broken chairs, or we don't have the right equipment on the walls. We don't have a television that I can plug in a laptop or an iPad or my phone to and do some teaching. And so I think that is right, that if Sunday school is going to be healthy, if a group's ministry is going to be healthy, you have to budget for it. Now, it doesn't mean that a church has to go out and necessarily up their budget. That would be great. Some are not in the position to do that. So all I would say then would be to just reconsider how you're allocating the budget. You know, Tammy and I have done some home repair and improvement at our home, and we've not really, you know, magically produced money, you know, on the printing press in the back bedroom. We just said, hey, look, here's what we've got available, and we've been spending it on this. Now let's shift the dollars, and we'll spend it on, you know, a home repair project or two. So we just reallocated dollars. That's really all a church would have to do, is to take a look at everything they spend the money on and find those places. And I would almost guarantee you that every church budget has room in it for funds to be reallocated and put into the group's ministry. It's just somebody needs to go do it and take a hard look at it.
When I look at these 12, Ken, there's two things that emerge, two of the chapters. One, we've already talked about downsize for discipleship, which, Chris, you and I have talked about that I think, quite a bit on, you know, like disciple-making environments and groups. You know, you've got life groups, you've got groups on mission, you've got what we had Jeff Vanderstelt on the show. Mm-hmm. He talked about Life on Life, which is that smaller group, which mm-hmm. can appears to be you're advocating something like that here. But the other one that sticks out to me is Start New Groups. Both of these seem to address entrenched positions within a Sunday school culture. One,
true.
And Chris, it's been a while since I've been in a Sunday school church. I grew up in a Sunday school church. And
me too.
It hadn't been that long ago in the 2000s. We kind of circled through one. But in all of these churches, it seems like there's a couple of classes that are like Ken describes. They're 100 is, I can't even fathom a group of 100 or 150, but they're out there. So how do you go about, how would you counsel a church leader that knows that, but he's got, you know, let's be honest, this teacher that probably likes being, you know, the place where everybody goes and hangs out and has a good time. But then how does that, how do you get through that and get to the start new groups? Because we've probably done more shows on starting new groups as a topic than we have anything else, I would say. What is it about these two things, starting new groups and downsizing, that's such a challenge? And how do you counsel leaders in navigating those decisions and moving, you know, moving their leadership to those conclusions?
Great question. We could, if we could figure that out fully, we could go write us another book on starting groups like that, because that really is.
Or just another proposal.
Well, there you go. Another 15-page
proposal.
We'll
get a show out of that.
You've got a show out of a proposal, yeah.
It really is, I think, one of the challenges facing churches today, because, you know, nobody who's on a church staff or providing leadership to the group's ministry wants to go pick a fight. You know, that's not what they wake up thinking. So I'm going to go take the guy that's got the biggest class and really make him mad and tell him I want him to split his group about four or five times into groups of, you know, 15 or 20. Most folks are very happy, you know, that we've got 100 satisfied folks over there, and just leave them alone. You know, don't go blow them up. Well, if you ever let groups get to that size, your options are fairly limited, unless you want all-out nuclear war with the teacher and you're just going to force them to break that group up. You almost have to work with each of those teachers of those larger groups and build relationship with them, have conversations about the benefits of getting that group down to a smaller, more manageable size that others would feel capable to come in and lead. I mean, I want new group leaders to be able to look at a teacher and to say, you know what, if I had the same tools, if they gave me a leader guide, if they gave me the resources that this teacher has, I could teach a group of 15 or 20. I think with the big groups, they see a teacher teaching a group of 100 or 150 or 75 or whatever the number may be, and they think, I could never do that. And that is what has stymied some churches from growth, is they're not starting new groups. And I have experienced the pain of trying to connect to established groups. And I don't know if y'all have done that lately, but it's hard.
It's very hard.
I mean, you just ricochet off. You try to build relationships, but you just can't. And my wife and I spent probably the loneliest year of our life when we first moved here in 2010. And we were trying to find a church to plug in to one of their small groups. And we just kept hitting groups that we kept bouncing right off of them. And I realized what had happened is that these folks had been together for so long that that the relationships created this barrier for us. And they really didn't need us, because they had all the relationships that they could handle. They didn't need another one. I was, you know, Tammy and I would have been another thing for them to juggle. So they weren't trying to be rude, but they had forgotten that it is really difficult for the new people coming into the church to connect to an existing group. So I think telling stories about people like that, like Tammy and I's experience, helps folks to go, oh, I didn't realize it's really that hard. I thought folks just came in and, you know, instantly fit in our group. Actually, they don't. It's a lot harder than we think it is for folks to come in and forge new relationships.
Larry Osborne uses the analogy of a Lego piece.
Yeah.
And people are like a Lego piece, and you have only so many connectors. And once those connectors are full, they're full. And you just don't have room for another Lego piece to go into your connector. So
that's exactly right. Yeah. And you know, Chris, most groups that hit that 18-month, if they've been together for 18 months to 24 months tops, they are probably a closed group. Now, they may say, hey, we're open, we want new people, but functionally they're closed because at that mark, you know, you've lived life together, you've experienced the ups and the downs and the joys and the pains of life, and you've kind of become close-knit. And it really takes an exceptional group and an exceptional leader to keep that focus outward on the not-yet-here people. I just, you know, when you hit the 24-month mark, it's tough. And most groups have been together for that longer. And so this is why it's so important that churches have a regular rhythm of starting new groups, and maybe even by the design of the facilities, Brian, not letting groups get to that size, not having a room big enough for 100 folks to get together.
That's good.
You know, because as we design a new building for the church I'm serving, we have already decided the biggest classrooms we're going to have will have room for about 25 adults. That's it. Mm-hmm. So when they start hitting 20, 22, it is time to start another group. And so we're going to limit it by the design of the facilities.
So, Ken, you lead one of the best teams here at Lifeway, I think. What are you most excited about that you guys have coming around?
I think the thing that we're hearing the most positive feedback right now from the church is the Daily Discipleship Guide, Brian. That is it is a new tool that was created about 2 years ago for Explore the Bible, and it went so well that has now branched out, and Gospel Project and Bible Studies for Life now have their versions of the Daily Discipleship Guide, and it is making a big difference in folks that have chosen to use that as a disciple-making tool in their groups.
And how can people find out more about that?
You know, you can come to lifeway.com, and you can just type in the search bar, Daily Discipleship Guide. You'll go to a landing page, and you'll have access to plenty of information. You can download free samples for all three curriculum lines, take a look at it, and see how it works. But it's really built on a great education model, the one that we've had for the last 40 years. We kind of turned it on its head in the Daily Discipleship Guide, and it is really hitting discipleship, I think, the way people are living these days. And so I think group leaders are finding it easier to use this as a tool in their groups and then beyond. You know, it's designed to be used after the group experience, not before. And that's a very different approach than what we've had in the past.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 69, which is the penultimate episode. No, that's not the right word either. But next time is 70. 70's great. And to commemorate it, Chris and I are taking group answers on the road. So if your church would like to host a remote episode of the Group Answers podcast show, reach out to Chris through Twitter. Chris, Ken, it's been great to be with you. And we look forward to being with everyone next time.
Thanks,
guys. That's a wrap for episode 69.